Welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report, chatting with Chris Temple, founder and editor of The National Investor. Now, Chris, there is, well, a lot for us to talk about today, really just focused on one story that was developing late last night and is continuing on today, and that is these U.S. airstrikes in Iraq. These really came out of the blue, I think. A lot of people looking at different factors to drive the markets, and everybody, I think, forgot that there's always these almost black swan events that can come out of left field and truly start to move markets. Now, the U.S. moved into Iraq, killed Iraq's top commander, which is a very significant story. And the significant part about this, too, is that I think we all agree that Iraq is going to retaliate. The market moves on the back of this are, at least initially, I think, somewhat to be expected. We're seeing safe havens move up and the risk on or U.S. markets move down. Take us through how you're processing this story and some of the market moves today, please.
Well, first of all, just, and I'm sure you intended this, but I think I did this yesterday. We're talking about Iran's leader, not Iraq's.
Ooh, yeah.
Iran's top military man, Qasem Soleimani, was at the airport in Baghdad, and he was killed along with several other people with him. This is the equivalent of, you know, a Colin Powell being killed on U.S. soil or on a friendly neighbor's soil by someone. You know, back in the day when Colin Powell was very widely heralded as a great military and diplomatic leader, this is how Iran looked at Soleimani. So this is not going to go unanswered, and a lot of people have warned for years that it's one thing for us to go over and pick on somebody who can't fight back, even Iraq, let alone a Syria or a Libya. It's an entirely different kettle of fish to go after the biggest military power, however, in outside of U.S.-backed ones like Saudi Arabia and, of course, Israel with all of its nuclear weapons and the rest, like a country like Iran. So we don't know what the answer will be. There will be one or more answers certainly to come. A lot of people are already over the top with the historical analogies that this is the equivalent of whacking Franz Ferdinand in 1914. The Archduke's murder back then, of course, led to World War I somewhat by accident as things cascaded. And so there is certainly that risk. But what you have to do now, Corey, and I said this, you know, I was on our mutual friend Ben Zynga, their pre-market show this morning, talking a little bit about this, following up their discussion before they had me on. And basically, you cannot take incidents like this or what you think is going to come or not come in the aftermath and craft your investment strategy based on that, because almost every time these types of things happen in years past, they will have a temporary impact on things, but that's all. What you need to do instead is revisit your core understanding of things and your core strategy and see if there are any ways in which this incident last night augments that or takes away from it. You know, it's interesting to me that gold is up today for reasons that harken back to early last year and are contradictory to the reasons gold went up going into the end of 2019. I'll be talking about that in an issue I'm putting out this weekend, so I won't spend a lot of time on that. Any way you look at it, gold benefits. However, you look at what some might think would be a slam dunk play, that the rise in oil prices as a result of this, as more of a risk premium gets built in, will provide a better case for still subdued energy stocks to rally. That just blew it up, in my view. Now you got to stay away from energy stocks again, because the whole thesis for energy stocks, and I think more so you can use the same argument, Corey, with cyclicals and base metals and stuff like that, at a time when people were starting to put a toe back in the water and copper and energy and whatnot, thinking that maybe the worst of global growth worries is over with. Maybe we're going to see a slight reflation trade into the next year as the central bank stays stimulative. You know, if this escalates into something that causes more headaches over the global economy, throw the energy stocks and base metal stocks and the rest of them away again.
Yeah, it's a very interesting nuance and a good comment there. One other thing to consider is that these moves, again, are benefiting the underlying metals or oil price, but I'm not seeing a ton of moves coming on the back end in terms of the stocks. Some of the major stocks are moving, but a lot of the juniors still aren't. So these are geopolitical issues. But well,
Corey, let me throw something in to second that. You know, if you're a commodity trader, a directional trader, and you're trading oil futures, you're happy. If you're bullish on oil generally and energy stocks generally because you think that there's some value there, this move in oil today is the very last thing you wanted to see for oil to move up, because this undermines everything.
Yeah. Now, Chris, what about too, kind of looking ahead? As you said, sometimes, a lot of the time, these things are very short-term moves in terms of markets, because geopolitical issues come and go, and they usually come and go quite quickly. But now that it seems like everybody is waiting for some sort of a response, either out of Iran, out of Iraq, and even out of China, does that maintain some sort of a buy until we get a little bit more clarity on the other end?
No. And I'll tell you, I said this to you off mic, you know, early this morning when I was watching this, the futures open and we were down almost 400 points on the Dow. As you and I are recording this, that's been cut basically in half. I will be shocked if we get to the end of the day today and we've not at least revisited those futures lows from this morning. Because if I'm, you know, if I'm a money manager or trader, this is Friday. I've gotten away with playing the passive investing game, and now we're January 2nd, next week, or January 3rd, I'm sorry, next Monday, everybody's back at their desk. You have no idea if this is going to get worse. There's going to be some other incident over the weekend, and if I have half a brain, I'm taking some profits today. And I think that this uncertainty now that's going to be baked in tilts things if they weren't already. And I guess in some cases they weren't, because people still felt pretty bulletproof chasing the momentum, you know, the big cap stocks higher. But this has to have tilted things in the favor of people starting to take some of 2019's profits now, before it's too late to take them and something worse happens. So I think that this, and this is where, as I alluded to a few minutes ago, Corey, my thesis already was, as you and I have discussed in recent days, that we were going to see an early year correction, and then it was basically a question of whether we just have a slow, dull ache the rest of the year, or some market accident happens and causes a bigger decline. Those are the two likely scenarios ahead of us. That just got strengthened. Certainly the argument is against any ongoing bull market.
So how about the safe havens, though? Does this keep a buy in them as well, or do you think that the uneasiness also might make some of these moves faded a little bit because of we are going into a weekend?
Well, I told you yesterday before this happened that if there was one thing I saw in front of me that I was most sure of, it's that the rise in long-term interest rates in the market was over with. You can underline and put a couple exclamation points on that now. So if you're not already heavily long treasuries, you should be, as well as treasury proxies. Gold is going to keep a bid in it, as we're seeing today, now back to a safe haven rather than an inflation hedge. There's still that resistance issue around 1570 an ounce, give or take a little bit. I don't think it'll go through quickly unless some other shoe drops, then it very well may do it. The odd duck in the mix is the U.S. dollar, which was also up early on nicely this morning, but then it got undermined and lost its gains after the U.S. decided it didn't want to be left out. And the ISM numbers, I sent you a link, I hope you'll put it up with this. They came out with their comprehensive report, and we had just as ugly a purchasing managers index report as the ugliness we saw to Germany and China yesterday. And that was unexpected. So when the dollar was also benefiting, and it probably still will, at least for the time being, it gave back the gain today because the economy in the U.S. is weaker.
Now let's talk quickly about those numbers, because the PMI came in at 47.2%. Anything under 50 is still looked at quite negatively, and this was actually lower than the month before. GDP growing at 1.3%. So that GDP number, it's kind of mixed, I think, in the sense that there were some estimates of under 1%, but then they had been raised throughout that Q4, and now we're seeing 1.3%. Still not overly strong, but not really collapsing. But the trend is still lower. That seems to be the story, again, not just in the U.S., but I think it is important to note that the U.S., while it's not in a full contraction in terms of GDP, the numbers are just steadily declining. That needs to be at least looked at a little bit negatively, but then usually what we see when we see these negative data points is people looking to the Fed and saying, oh, well, this will just push them more into the easy road and easy monetary policy, so the Fed's got our back. How do you balance out those two, the actual data and then the projections of how the Fed's going to react?
Well, you know, the U.S. for a while now, Corey, has been, in relative terms at least, better than much of the rest of the world, but we're inevitably slowing down too. And as I've said so many times, this has far less to do with the trade uncertainties and all that kind of stuff and the resulting phenomenon of some businesses sitting on their hands, and it's all about huge debt levels. I don't care what, how much you lower the price of money, if everybody's already in debt up to their eyeballs and doesn't need to buy anymore, whatever the price of money is, I don't want it. And that's what the Fed is facing. And, you know, what everybody has always called this pushing on a string kind of phenomenon, the Fed not seemingly at times understanding the mess it itself created. And this is what, you know, we're going to talk about this on the weekend in the terms of this whole inflation versus deflation debate and where we're at. But I didn't see or hear anybody refer yet today to the Fed funds futures market. But between these two things, the killing of Soleimani over in Baghdad, as well as the lousy economic numbers this morning, guaranteed the odds for 2020 of one or more additional rate cuts just went up.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to end this week with now some war headlines on the forefront, which is pretty interesting. And then, again, this economic data, I think, is getting overshadowed, but it is another reason for U.S. markets to at least be down temporarily today and wait for some sort of a response from the Fed. But, hey, overall, Chris, some interesting comments there and some interesting stories to talk about that everyone was distracted by other issues that included trade and the Fed. And now we have all this airstrike that really throws a big question mark in terms of what the retaliation is going to be and how weak this is going to make the markets. But hey,
let
Chris,
me, Corey, if I may, let me throw one last thing in really quick that people need to keep in the back of their mind with all of the conspiracy theories and accusations being thrown around, by design or not. Okay, and I'm not taking a side because I can't prove one or the other. But not only did President Trump's re-election chances just get enhanced after last night, whatever the outcome is, really, when you think about it, but he and the Fed will be taken off the hook for any real responsibility they might have as the year goes on if the market and economy don't hold together in much the same way that we saw after 9/11 in 2001. When prior to that, you had a lot of people with serious questions about the Fed and specifically Alan Greenspan's volatile stewardship of the Fed in those days. We were already in a bear market, already in a recession, and their finger pointing at everybody else stopped after 9/11, when now the people that caused all of that mess were able to blame those dirty terrorists that attacked America. And likewise, whatever comes as a result of this, and if things escalate, that will get the blame for whatever economic and stock market fallout there is, and the Trump administration and the Fed will largely be absolved. You mark my words.
Chris, one follow-up on that real quick. Is there any difference here that the U.S. instigated this rather than September 11th when it was an attack on U.S. soil?
No, because the party line already is that this, of course, this is Orwellian doublespeak, but we were defending ourselves and U.S. people and American interests over halfway around the world where they shouldn't be in the first place. and that latter part of it where they shouldn't be in the first place, the majority of Americans will not care about, and virtually everyone who supported Trump, frankly, to a great extent, because he said he'd get us out of this, they'll fall right in line behind him. So the fact that we're in a part of the world we should have long since been out of and stopped causing trouble in, the fact that we killed somebody over there and it didn't happen here, will matter very, very little.
All right, Chris, we're wrapping it up there. Good chatting with you. We're going to follow up on a discussion for the weekend show, but that is going to be a bit more focused on that whole inflation-deflation narrative. So, everyone, pay attention to that. And, Chris, thanks for your time this morning.